The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
I have the pleasure of introducing Zan Tyler. For the past 35 years, Zan and her husband Joe have been actively involved in the American homeschool movement, teaching and mentoring others. At their speaking engagements, they take their audiences beyond the demands of everyday life to embrace a wondrous, life-giving vision of family life. This session is called Running the Homeschool Marathon, 10 Training Tips. And here is Zan Tyler.
Thank you. I was trying to remember to turn off my cell phone. We are not connected. Let me do this real quick. Okay, well, if you've homeschooled for any length of time, you know that it is really a marathon and not a sprint. And if you spend too much time sprinting, you'll have no energy left for the marathon. So I used to run a lot when I was in high school and college, mainly because my dad did and I liked running with him. But as we got married and I had more kids and a little trouble with my knees, I started walking a lot. But I still like to read marathoners because they have great strategies on coping with stressful situations that last for a long time. And that could be a good definition of homeschooling. and it's joyful and it's great, but we really do need to treat it like a profession and give ourselves strategies that will give us some longevity. So one of the things we didn't get to cover in the last session that I really wanted to, and it's near and dear to my heart, is that there are three types of curriculum. So we'll talk about the first type of curriculum right now because I think this is fascinating. The word curriculum comes from the Latin word carere, which means to run. And that was first used during the time of the Roman Empire, to refer to the course used for chariot races. So the curriculum was the racetrack or the course that was to be run. So listen to that definition of curriculum as our racetrack or the race that the Lord has put in front of us in terms of this verse from Hebrews 11:12. Therefore then, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us strip off and throw aside every encumbrance, every unnecessary weight, and the sin that so easily clings to us and entangles us. And let us run with patient endurance and steady and active persistence the appointed course of the race that is set before us. So God has appointed a race for each one of us to run. And that racetrack, the Latin word for that is curriculum. And so I love to think about our kids. Thank you so much, by the way. I love to think about our kids' curriculum in terms of helping them discern the race that God has set before them. So as a homeschooling parent, we're a coach and a marathoner or a runner all at the same time. So we're trying to discern the own race, the racetrack, the curriculum that God has appointed us to, as well as what our children's race is supposed to look like, that type of curriculum. So I think it's really helpful to think about their life course in terms of this racetrack. And we want to help them run well. We want to run well. So we need some strategies. We'll talk about the other two types of curriculum in just a few minutes. But I want to lay that as sort of the ground level curriculum, the racetrack of the race of our children's lives, the race that God has appointed for them. Then the second thing in the race that's important besides the curriculum for our children, the race they're to run, is their coach. And you are their coach. You are their teacher. All these Olympic athletes, they're always changing courses, hoping to find somebody who will know them a little bit better or understand them a little bit better and be able to make them just a few seconds or a few minutes faster. But with our kids, the Lord has not only appointed their racetrack, their curriculum, He's also appointed their coaches. And we are those coaches. I love what Harriet Beecher, Henry Ward Beecher, who was Harriet Beecher Stowe's brother. So Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. He was, and then Henry Ward Beecher was a pastor in the 1800s. And he said this, the mother's heart is the child's classroom. So a lot of times we're worried about the physical aspect of our classroom. I don't spend much time on social media, but I had to see this with my own eyes. A friend of mine told me about this woman who had just finished doing her perfect Pinterest classroom at home. She had found the perfect homeschool classroom, she thought. She had copied it to the T. And then her husband had gotten a job assignment where he was transferred to Italy for a year. And she had the choice of going with the children or staying home. The homeschool mom in me is saying, go, 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 go. You know, the world is our classroom. The kids will learn so much from living in a different culture and a different language. But she didn't want to leave her classroom, because she had the perfect Pinterest classroom. So what I'm telling you is we do have to pay attention to our physical surroundings. Some of us do that more than others. I'm not always great at that. And because I'm almost totally auditory and not very visual. But he does remind us that it's our heart first. If our heart isn't right toward our children or toward the Lord, it really doesn't matter what the rest of our classroom looks like. So we have to focus on our heart, focus on our children's race, our heart as their coaches, and then I think we're ready to start the race. Are any of you, I know I keep asking this, but I really want to know because I think you have particular needs. Any of you first-year homeschoolers in here? Okay. All right. Because of that, I'm going to do this, and I hope the rest of you will be patient with me. So there's a gold medal marathoner that I used to like to read, and his name was Jeffrey Galloway. And he said some interesting things about starting a new pursuit. So I've been homeschooling for a long time, and I thought, I need to do something new. I need to try something new so I can remember that awkward feeling of wanting to do something but not being able to figure out how to do it. Those of you who have been homeschooling for a while, I really encourage you to do that because it will give you real empathy for the new homeschoolers in your midst. We were at Jan and Roger's house, and they have horses, and I hadn't ridden horses probably in 30 years. So I got on a horse, and I thought, oh, this is really uncomfortable. And there were just a few things Jan could tell me to do to make, you know, sort of take me back to where I was as a kid, and I could ride a little bit. And it was just a little bit of tweaking and helping that got me comfortable with it. And then a bunch of people that I work with, this is a Christian organization, we were having our annual meeting together. It was more like a retreat. They wanted to go axe throwing. So, you know, you have these, there are these indoor things and you throw the axe. Well, I mean, my husband is an athlete. I am not an athlete. Now, I could run forever back in the day, but I sure can't throw anything. So I'm trying to learn how to throw this axe and make it stick. I had one bullseye and quit. I thought I might as well quit while I'm ahead, but it's so awkward to try something new. So I want to tell you, if you're just starting out, go easy on yourself. Don't expect to be where your friends are who have homeschooled for 12 years. Do expect to make mistakes. Don't worry about the mistakes. Just give yourself grace and enjoy being with your children. But here's what the marathon runner is saying to new runners. He says this, every beginning is precarious. There you are, perched on the edge of starting something entirely new. Yet there are distractions, even criticisms. You know, people love to criticize you when you start homeschooling, that cause detours and dead ends. You want to be more healthy and fit, but you may not realize how secure you've become in an inactive world. Each time you go out for a run, you encounter a new side of yourself, one that must somehow be integrated into your daily life. That's how I feel about homeschooling. Every day I homeschooled, I would encounter a little bit of a new side of myself, and I would come to the end of myself in another way. Somebody asked me about homeschooling moms how much you learn as a homeschooling mom. And I'm thinking, well, I've been to high school 3 more times now. And I was a pretty good student the first time. But boy, when you start teaching from that perspective, it's amazing the things you learn. And then all the things you're learning just about teaching and knowing your children that you're having to integrate into your life. He says there's usually a struggle within and without. The old lifestyle is there and offers security, like, put your kids back on the school bus. It's so much easier, you know. And so that first year, just make sure you have a little bit of support and some commitment. And then he said your running also may be threatening to your less active friends. So this was so interesting. When we first started homeschooling and not many people were homeschooling, occasionally the kids and I would venture out during the daytime, and it would just make people mad. Well, why aren't your kids in school? Well, we homeschool. And they'd start giving me all their reasons for why they would never homeschool. And I asked my husband, why are they doing that to me? I'm not criticizing them for where their kids are in school. And Joe said, well, you've uncovered a little bit of guilt in them. And they feel like they should be homeschooling. So they're going to take the offensive and tell you all the reasons they would never do that to your kid. So it really is interesting what happens when you take a stand to do something differently. And I think it just helps us to prepare ourselves for that a little bit. We talked about this in an earlier session. Okay, so you guys who are over there, most everybody's over here. I don't know if anybody wants to move, but I'm going to try to. This is a big room for a few people. One of the things we talked about early on in the session, one of the sessions, is to cast your vision. You have to know why you're homeschooling. Now, the first year we homeschooled, we were homeschooling to get our child ready for the first grade. That was the reason we were homeschooling. And then gradually, as you heard my story, you know that more and more, I felt like it was a real calling from God, and I'm beginning to see the educational benefits. But at first, that was my reason to homeschool. And as that year progressed, I thought, I need to start recording. Somebody encouraged me to record the Bible verses, the verses from Scripture that the Lord was giving me to reaffirm that decision. And so I started writing those things down. And then I started writing down the things that I would like to see develop in my children. And before you know it, you have a philosophy of education. Write it out. I'm going to leave this up here. I know I've talked about this a lot. I think this is so extremely helpful. If you haven't seen this, when Harvard University was started in the United States, I guess it was Harvard College then, in 1636, it was by Christians. And in 1646, they wrote their rules and precepts. And I always say to new homeschoolers, if you're looking for a philosophy of education, this is the best one I've seen for my home that I didn't write. Now, do they know my children? No. Do they know my circumstances? No. But this reminded me that at the end of the day, I want my children to know Christ. So even when I'm educating them, everything should be under this grid. The way I teach subjects, the exposure I give them. Does that mean I don't expose them to anything non-Christian? Absolutely not. But I give them the skill set to recognize what they are being exposed to. So let every student be plainly instructed and earnestly pressed to consider well the end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life, and therefore lay Christ at the bottom as the only foundation of all sound knowledge and learning. It's just hard for me to believe that came from Harvard. So tip number 2, identify the benefits of the marathon. So a friend of mine that I met along my homeschooling journey said, you need to start at the end and work backwards. What do you want your children to look like? So I had this experience when we were probably in our third year of homeschooling, because Ty was in his third grade, and we had gone to our first national leadership conference. And I had never even considered the fact that we might homeschool in high school, just like I never considered the fact that I might homeschool because I had never heard of homeschooling. So then you're introduced with a totally foreign new concept, And we embrace that. So back in the day, people's thought were you homeschool through third or fourth grade, and then you put your children back in school. So if I had thought then when we started that the Lord might be calling me to homeschool in high school, I would have run the other way. So we go to this national conference, and there's this family there with teenage girls. And so I'm thinking, oh, they took their kids out of school for the week to be here. Silly me. So I'm talking to these girls, and they are so fascinating, and they are so mature, and they have good senses of humor, and they could talk to me as adults. And they were telling me what they wanted to do with their future. I mean, that always changes for teenagers. But they were thinkers, and they were kind. I mean, they were just everything you would want high school student to be. So I was thinking in the back of my mind about this advice, work backwards, what do you want your child to look like when they graduate, and how are you going to get them there? And so I'm thinking, okay, these are girls, I have boys, but I love these character traits in these kids. So I innocently asked the mom, so where do your kids go to high school? And she looked at me, she's so funny, she said, oh, we homeschool them. I just remember thinking, oh, Lord Jesus, please don't tell me you might want me to homeschool in high school. It was such a profound moment in my life. It was so scary. I can remember where I was standing in this room. I don't have very many clear memories like that. I mean, I remember what I was doing when John F. Kennedy, our president, was assassinated when I was 9 years old. I remember giving birth to my children. I remember getting married. And I remember this woman telling me she homeschooled in high school. So that kind of ranked up there in terms of trauma with all those other events in my life. But it just, over the years, I would keep thinking back to this visual picture the Lord had given me of these kids. And then what my friend said about working backwards really started to make sense. And how does homeschooling play into that picture? So, of course, we don't know what the Lord is going to do with our children. We don't know what the Lord is going to do with us from day to day. But I did have this picture, especially as the kids were getting older, of where I thought the Lord might take them and how he might use them and what I wanted them to look like. And the longer we homeschooled, the more I thought the Lord might be calling me to homeschool in high school. And I want to come back to that and tell you sort of how that story ended. So homeschool with the end in mind. And then I just had a list of things that I wanted my children to have. This can figure into your philosophy of education. So I really wanted my kids to know Jesus. I mean, that was our big thing. We wanted our kid to know Jesus. Now, we didn't want them to be uneducated kids who knew Jesus. So bear with me here. But Joe and I loved to listen to James Dobson back in the day. He was the founder of Focus on the Family, if you're familiar with that radio broadcast out of California. And he told this story. I can't remember if we heard him speak in person or not, but he would tell his children, you know, heaven is real. And this life is a shadow. It's an important shadow of the real life to come in eternity. But one day we want to be in eternity together. And he would always tell his kids, be there, just to remind them that there's more to this life than meets the eye, and eternity is real. So as our kids were growing up, when Joe would turn off the light, putting them to bed, he would just always look at them and say, be there. And that was their auditory cue that there is more to this earth than we see now. And so we just wanted our kids to know Christ, to know that this life is not the end, it's just the beginning for believers. And we wanted to give them a curriculum. We wanted to discern their racetrack, the race that God had called them to, and we wanted to give them an education that fit them. So we talked about that a little bit yesterday when in the keynote session when we talked about learning about Proverbs 22:6. What it means is it means that God has bent our children in particular ways and given them particular gifts. We talked this morning about each child has different learning styles, and so they're going to have different goals in life. And so we're going to spend a little bit of time here because we have it today to spend. And so each of the way we educated our children was a little bit different based on who they were. So Ty, my oldest, was the auditory kinesthetic learner who couldn't sit still and, you know, couldn't be quiet. And so the way I educated him was very different than the way I educated John and Lizzie. But Ty and John had two similar interests, and that is that they were both extremely good athletes, and they were very involved in politics with me. And when I say politics, I mean civically involved in lobbying, and then we would get involved in campaigns with the people that helped us, those types of things. So it was really interesting to see the Lord help me build on the strengths and the interest he had put into them. And so a lot of people in homeschooling, sometimes sports gets a bad reputation, like there's no point in it, there's no good in it. But we found that especially as the boys were adolescents and they had a good place, they had a healthy place to deposit some of those raging hormones, that it was healthy for them. It also became a real part of their ministry. So here are a couple of things that the boys did to minister with their sports. And I just want you to think about what your kids are involved in as they're younger and get older that can be a ministry avenue for them. So I can remember we always had a service project, and we'll talk about this in our service workshop, the last one of the day. But the boys had been at a support group meeting with me. Okay, so you're going to laugh at this. You just have to remember homeschooling was so different in the 80s and early 90s. And the mothers were so worried about not being able to teach PE. Okay, so this was a real thing, I'm telling you, because we had to put PE on our progress reports for the local public schools before we didn't have to go through the public schools anymore. And PE was terrible for some of us. So the kids came home, the boys were like 12 and 14, and they come home laughing from the support group meeting, and they said, "Mom, these moms are all such good moms and teachers. The thought of PE is killing them." Ty said, "I know how to teach PE, Mom. We can teach PE. We might be 12 and 14. We can teach PE." And so before I knew it, they didn't ask me this. I think this is one of my favorite memories of homeschooling. I go upstairs. I can tell they're plotting something that they're not telling me. And I finally said, "Okay, what is going on?" And they said, "Well, we just decided, we needed to take the bull by the horns, and we're doing a PE class for the homeschoolers. So we called Miss Bateman, and Miss Bateman said she would help us get the community center because we can't get it as a 14-year-old. And they're going to have a homeschool mom there with us every week. We're going to offer it for 6 weeks, and then if they want to do it again, we'll take 2 weeks off and do it." And John and I have laid out, they played soccer and baseball and basketball and swam, and, you know, there wasn't anything they couldn't do physically. And they said, we've studied it. We know what we're going to do, what kind of games we're going to play, and what kind of activities we're going to do. So my oldest son had just been trained in Child Evangelism Fellowship, CEF. And so he had learned how to do Bible studies with younger kids. And then he said, "Mom, so at the end of the 2 hours, we're going to take 30 minutes and have a Bible story time and prayer time with these younger kids because they think we're pretty cool because we're teenagers." And that was true. And so it was so interesting to me to see the boys take their gift in sports and translate that into helping the homeschooling moms in our areas. I think I mentioned this earlier. They were counselors at FCA camps, Fellowship of Christian Athlete camps. My son John was asked by a pastor to organize a soccer team when he was in college to take overseas as an evangelistic outreach in either, I can't remember if it was England or Wales. So it's interesting the kind of education the boys got through their sports that was totally different than anything they were getting in their books, but they were learning how to see the needs of people and how to meet them, how to care for people, how to help these homeschoolers, and how to share the gospel in the course of that. They also loved politics. So as they grew up with me, it was interesting the doors, you know, they were in the legislature with me. They got to know our governor. They got to know legislators. So they're living life with me, and this is where I live my life, and this is what they come to know. And so, you know, and so as time went on, that turns out they couldn't play sports in the public high school, which in retrospect we were really glad for. We didn't have that possibility in South Carolina. So all that time they would have spent on a high school sports team, then they had some free time, and our senator hired them to be legislative aides with them. Even though they were in high school, they had always reserved those for college students. They got to go to Washington, D.C. and be part of our U.S. Senate PAGE program. So they had a lot of education that was geared towards civic engagement, public speaking, learning how to be involved in politics, learning the importance of democracy and voting, those types of things. And so that was a real unique education for them. Now, did we still have biology and math and history and all those things? We did, but they were very engaged in these other things. It was really an integral part of their education. So Lizzie comes along, and she's my fine arts girl. So she loves piano. She loved piano. She was in a children's choir. She was in community theater, and she took tap, and she loved to dance. And so as she gets older, so much, you know, we did a lot of things in literature that were fine arts based that were really very instructive for her. We knew she might be interested in broadcast journalism, so we're looking for opportunities for her for internships, places that I trusted when she was in high school before she went into college. Several of our friends, we had what we call the governor schools for the arts in some of our states, and Lizzie would have qualified for that and would have been accepted for that, but it was a boarding situation, and I didn't raise my daughter in the fine arts to send her to a school that was not Christian-based, and the fine arts were, I thought, were a terrible place for her to live if it wasn't framed by Christians. And so, you know, we just decided, no, Lizzie, you're not doing that. But we found Christian instructors in each of these areas that could be an acting coach, and that helped her with community theater, and that was the head of her children's choir. And they sang around the country, and we had a Christian woman who was head of that. So we really tried to set up this mirror for the governor's school for the arts for Lizzie to have these same exposure, but it was an education based on her gifts. We still had the core subjects that she had to do, but she could use her strengths and be involved in an education that really focused on her strengths. And then, just like the boys, some homeschool moms approached her when she was a teenager and said, Lizzie, would you teach ballet to our girls? We'd like to use Christian music and classical music. We would like for them to have modest outfits. We would like for you to do a Bible study with them or a devotional with them at the beginning or the end of each session. And so, you know, for us, it was so much fun to plan our years, not just based on what they could do academically, but how God was weaving their strengths and interests into their lives. You might live on a farm, and your child may show, we were talking to somebody, to Cheryl, whose son started a chicken farm when they were in high school, and it's amazing what this son has done. But my point is to, for school, not to be so one-dimensional that it's only textbooks. So I've worked for several publishers. The first half of my homeschooling career, I call it freedom fighting and setting up homeschooling organizations and that type of infrastructure for homeschoolers in our area. And then the second half of my life has been involved in Christian publishing and really encouraging publishers to have biblically based worldview curriculum and helping with that process. So I love textbooks personally. I love studying. I loved being a student. It's just how God made me. But if we look at the three kinds of curriculum, so we talked about the racetrack being the curriculum, the books we choose are the curriculum, the gifts our kids give, that are the gifts that God gives our kids, I think that's part of that race he wants them to run that makes their race different than everybody else's race. And then there was Ray Vanderlaan, who was a PhD and a Christian educator. And he said the other type of curriculum are the things that God brings into the lives of our children. So there are the three types of curriculum. And we need to know that as we're identifying what our kids want them to look like when they graduate, it's more than a transcript. Now, the transcript's important. I'm not minimizing that, but it's much more than a transcript. It's understanding their race. It's understanding their strengths. It's finding an education that really maximizes those things. And it's also allowing for God to be God in our lives and bring unexpected things into our lives, like Ray Vanderlaan says. So all of those things go into the benefits of running the homeschooling marathon. I really encourage you to take out a morning once a year and write down what the Lord is calling you to with your family. How has he developed your children? Do they need remedial help in math? Do they need to be accelerated in the language arts? Every child is different. And then the last thing, and we talked about this in the last section, so I'm not going to belabor it here, is that we want our family unit to be strong. And there are all kinds of ways that we access that hope as homeschoolers. So find a mentor or trainer. Everybody needs help. I would encourage you to get involved with a local support group, or some of you have Facebook groups. Definitely be involved with Matches and their conference. They are always looking for help. But we all need help. So when we started homeschooling, I think my heart to help homeschooling moms came from the fact that I had no help. And so as we were setting up our first homeschooling organization, I wanted there to be homeschooling moms that were counselors. So in our homeschooling organization, we had somebody who was an elementary counselor, a special needs counselor, and a high school counselor, because that was the kind of help I needed when I was a young homeschooling mom and I had none. So, you are not in a position anymore where you have to homeschool by yourself. Find a support group. Find a veteran homeschool mom. Be part of a state organization, but surround yourself as much as possible with like-minded people. So this is this story really hit home. Like I say, my husband and sons are athletes. I'm not. They wanted to go snow skiing with the family. So I went. So I can't ski and I hate being cold. So this is not like my favorite activity. And so we went. I could never master it. And my boys and Joe were heckling me and making fun of how bad I was. So I took my husband's credit card and I rented a ski instructor. And it was not cheap. I wanted them to leave me alone. But this woman was my age and she had learned how to ski 5 years earlier. And she said, "Zan, let me see you ski." She said, "All you got to do is tweak this and tweak that." After 30 minutes, y'all are going to think this is funny being in Canada. I'm going down the green and blue diamonds, and I'm a happy girl because I can ski. And my goal was never the black diamonds, never serious skiing, but just to be able to ski. So I'm skiing with this woman who could just make the slightest tweaks and help me be successful. And Ty and John and Joe are in the ski lift above me, and Joe yells down, "There's Mom and her rent-a-friend." But it was amazing how much that rent-a-friend helped me. And so find a homeschool mom that's a little bit ahead of you. I can remember when I started homeschooling Lizzie, so she was 7 years younger than John and 9 years younger than Ty. So they're in high school by the time I start homeschooling her. And I thought, she's my girl. She's interested in totally different things than the boys. I just wanted to talk to a mom and get some help. So I had a really good friend, Kathy Simmons, with a daughter, Amy, and I loved Amy. And it's not like I looked at Amy and said, oh, I want Lizzie to be like Amy. But Amy had character traits and abilities that were very similar to my Lizzie. So I asked Kathy, I said, I had been homeschooling 9 years. I said, will you get together and help me? And so she took 2 hours out of a day one day, met me for lunch, and I said, I want to know everything you do with Amy. I want to know every book she's read, every curriculum she's used, every extracurricular activity she's in, and tell me why you think that was helpful. And you know, it was really great because I needed a mentor then, and there was somebody for me to go to for help. So don't feel like you can't ask for help. I think sometimes when we start homeschooling, we think it's a sign of weakness when something goes wrong or a child's having a problem. And if we go to somebody else, we're admitting we can't do that. Well, guess what? We can't do it all. And so we can't be afraid to ask for help. I just think that's pride. And so really find somebody you admire or that you can trust. So on the other hand, if you're really struggling with homeschooling or you're depressed or down, and you know your pastor hates homeschooling, you might call him about other things. Don't call him about homeschooling. If you love your mother-in-law, but she hates homeschooling, talk to her about other things or hates homeschooling. Don't talk to her about the struggles you're having with homeschooling. I was speaking at a conference. It was sort of a more formal conference in Tennessee at the Gaylord Hotel. This is a hotel like with 40 acres under the roof. This is this huge conference hotel. And it's done in circles and pods and nothing rectangular or square. I could never get my bearings, and Joe wasn't with me. And so they're having this youth conference, pastor, at the same time I'm there for this preschool and early elementary education and churches conference. And I'm lost. And I see these two cute guys that remind me so much of my sons. And I say, you know what? I bet y'all can help me. Oh, yeah, Miss Tyler, we know her. You know, and they're so cute and they're talking to me and they walk me halfway there and then they leave. Well, I end up in the exact opposite end of the hotel. Were they cute and sweet and I really liked them? Yes. Did they give me good advice? No, it was horrible and train wrecked my session. So you want to just remember, when you go to somebody for help, don't go to somebody who hates what you're doing. Go to somebody that has a similar vision and can help you through the hard times. So, you know, we all need to pace ourselves and run smart. I love what the marathon runner says. You don't win or lose a marathon in the first 100 yards. It's a long-term investment. So especially those of you who are, maybe not especially those of you who are new, but and also those of you who have been homeschooling for a long time, sometimes we've just got to change our pace. I love what this one marathoner said about running. He said people always feel like they have to run the whole marathon. I encourage people to take walk breaks because they rest some muscles that have been overstressed. They can walk longer. It prevents energy. They catch their breath. They're not trying to win a medal for the marathon. They're trying to complete it. I thought that was really good advice. So we had really good friends with 4 boys, and we were with them in Louisiana. This wasn't the Smiths. This was another family. And the husband was sharing with us that they had come up with their new plan for their new homeschool year. And the wife wanted to make sure that they got up early enough to practice their instruments, do their chores, have their quiet time, and eat breakfast all before 8:30 when they started their schoolwork. And so I've had these failed plans before, and I was hoping that Brenda wouldn't fail on my account, but it sure would make me feel better if she did. And so Joe called Tommy to find out how things were going. And he said, well, my wife called me at 8:30 and the boys still hadn't found their matching socks yet. And so sometimes we have unrealistic expectations. I know many of you are farmers. I have friends at home who are farmers, and they really do have to get up at 4:30 and get all of this done before they're on a dairy ranch or dairy farm, before they do the milking and all these other things. So, but your life determines your schedule, and you've got to relax a little bit. There's this old fable about, you know, the lumberjack in Oregon. We had some friends who lived in Oregon, and they were always telling me this story, you know, rest, Sam, you need to rest. And the older man was in a competition with a younger lumberjack. And the younger lumberjack was a lot stronger and quicker. And man, he was chopping those logs. And every 15 minutes, the old man was resting. Well, it turns out he was sharpening his axe. So guess who wins the competition? Not necessarily the person who kills themselves in the process of competing, the person who learns how to work smarter. So, you know, some people are overwhelmed just by the everydayness of homeschooling, and you never have a chance to get your bearings together. So we had friends who would homeschool 4 days a week and take that extra day off to catch up. And so they would homeschool 6 weeks on, 1 week off, 6 weeks on, 1 week off, and then they would take 2 or 3 weeks at a time in the summer. Where we lived, the boys wanted to play with their friends during the summertime, and I needed a break too, so we never felt like we could do that. But there were other ways to cope. The Lord just sent me a mommy's helper when Lizzie was little and the boys were in high school, and we were trying to finish up the lobbying and legislation, and she worked for me 2 mornings a week, 3 hours, you know, so it was 6 hours a week, and just charged me next to nothing. But it was just, I just had some help. That helped me get over that 1 year where I thought I was going to die from the load. So every year we just need to reassess where we are and what we can do. One of my friends was a public school teacher. She said, Zan, I have reading days. I have a lot of paperwork I have to do. My kids come to school in their pajamas. We have sleeping bags. They bring their favorite books. They read all day long or play games quietly while I catch up on my paperwork. So, you know, we just need to be smart. I work with a company, BJU Press. We have video courses for people who need help with the teaching. They're co-ops. So just identify the type of help you need and don't be afraid to find it. If you can't afford it, just pray that God will send you what you need. God is waiting to bless you. And I have seen the Lord do miraculous things for us, not but because we deserved it, because we were his children. So I would just say, just make your needs known to the Lord. Now, we've already talked about learning styles, so I'm not going to labor that point. But really, in terms of helping you run this race, if you will take the time to understand your children's learning styles, I cannot tell you how much that will help you. I talked about this book, Growing Up Learning, that I read, which is out of print now. But one of the other things this doctor said that was so profound, he said, in the adult world, you will never find a group of adults that are working from their areas of weakness. They are always working from their areas of strength when they're in a group with other people. But in school, what do? We have a child who can't do math. So instead of helping that child, you know, maybe just manage that weakness and get done what he needs to get done, we, instead of 50 math problems, we give him 100 math problems. So he was saying that teachers just need to use common sense and realize that every child is not going to be a mathematician, and every child does not need to get out of a math course what a kid who's going to be an engineer does. So that's all I'm going to say about this point. But this whole idea of strengths and weaknesses is really key. Find that thing that lights your child's world up. I love Eric Little, who was the Olympic gold medalist in running, and I think he was from Scotland. And he said he was going to China on the mission field, but before he went to Chariots of Fire, many of you probably know his story, read his biography, or seen the movie. He wouldn't run on Sunday, so he didn't medal in the race he was favored to medal in, but he did win a gold medal. And this is what he said. He said, I know God has called me to the mission field, but he's also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure. So we all need to help our children to find those things in their lives that when they do it, they feel God's pleasure. And we need to turn them loose and let them experience that in their particular strengths. And, you know I have one or two things that I can't spend my life doing it, but when I do it, I feel God's pleasure, and it's just amazing. C.S. Lewis calls it the signature of the soul. Every child's soul is different. He also says, I never met an ordinary person. Isn't that interesting? None of our kids are ordinary. They're all extraordinary in different ways, and we need to find them those ways. So point number six, be adaptable, flexible, and maximize the benefits. If you're bringing kids out of school for the first time, I would say do not rush into heavy-duty academics all day, every day. Give them time to adjust. Help them find a couple of friends that are homeschooling so they don't feel like they are isolated and at home on their own. You need time to adjust. It's a whole new culture with its own language. And you just need to give yourself permission to ease into the homeschooling world and culture. Now, some children will do great. They beg their parents to homeschool them, and it's a relief to be out of school. Other kids are just going to be so social. They miss their friends so much, they will say, I want to go back to school. And as Roger said last night, it's not like they want to go back to school for the work. They want to go back to school for their friends. So find them some friends that they love. And you know, again and again, the Lord has answered those prayers for me that would be unimportant to the history of the universe and the salvation of the world and all those other things. But I had a need for my children, and I prayed, and the Lord didn't always meet those needs the way I thought he would, but he always sent us something that kept our children motivated. So don't be afraid of making mistakes or changing things. You're going to buy some curriculum that you're not going to use. Joe used to say if he had a nickel for every book I had bought that I didn't use or didn't use much of, he could have retired when he was 40. And so, you know, it's just part of teaching. You know how we talk about practicing medicine? Well, we're practicing teaching. It's an art, and we're going to make mistakes. The difference between us and a school is the school is like a yacht, and they can't turn on a dime. They've got to have a wide berth, and if they choose a bad curriculum, they can't replace it. It's too expensive. It's undoable or untenable logistically, but we can look at our children, and if they hate something we're doing, we can find a different way to do it or a different curriculum to do it with. And then I want to talk to you for just a minute about embracing unexpected learning opportunities. So we've talked about the two types of curriculum, the racetrack, the race that God has appointed for our children. That's the first type of curriculum. And we want to be aware of everything they bring to the race, and God wants them to get out of the race. Then the second type are the books we buy, the resources we use. And the third type, as Ray Vanderlaan said, are the interruptions that God brings into our lives. And they're not always good interruptions, but I really, and he called this God's curriculum. He's a Christian educator. I think he has his PhD in Hebrew studies. He spent a ton of time in Israel, but he was a very keen Christian administrator in a Christian school and teacher, I think in Michigan. So the man is very academic. He is not saying don't ever use a textbook, but he's saying the books we choose or our curriculum, the interruptions God brings into our lives is God's curriculum, and we should learn from it. And so these are, as I listened to this man speak, I went with my daughter to hear him speak when she was in Colorado. It was one of the most powerful speakers I've ever heard. He started talking about the different things God brings into our lives, and sometimes they're happy changes, and sometimes it's death or a husband loses a job. For us, I think about our homeschooling life and how many days I would come back from being in the legislature or at court, and we would have gone another day without finishing our workbook pages. And I mentioned this earlier, I would sit in my curriculum closet that Joe had built for me, and I would just cry. I mean, I would really weep. And yet, as it turns out, all these interruptions to my school life, my homeschooling day that I thought were messing with my schedule, God used to teach my boys different things. Like, one of my sons is an attorney and loves public policy. He taught him that through all the work we did in homeschooling. My other son was just out and about and meeting, you know, politicians and working in campaigns and talking to senators. The Lord used all of those skills in his career, you know, as a salesman. And my daughter grew up with cameras in our living room, and she used to say, I got more math done with a news reporter there than I ever did just in my room by myself. Well, it really gave her a heart for the media and how the media will determine how stories are reported. And so her adult career has been in broadcast journalism. So it's interesting, all these things that I thought were interruptions in my school day, it was God's curriculum where he was training my children in unique ways. Another way that wasn't quite so happy, when I was 6 months pregnant, the boys were 7 and 5, we lost Joy, our daughter, and I almost died in childbirth. And it was during the time that I was in the hospital, and it was a hard recovery, and I was emotionally devastated. These are the days of answering machines. We got a call on our answering machine, a message from the State Department of Education saying we needed to plan our end of the first public hearing in South Carolina on homeschooling. So Joe and I had to spend that week in the hospital planning this public hearing. All I wanted to do was go home and grieve my daughter and never see another human being again, at least for 2 or 3 weeks. I didn't want to homeschool. I didn't want to plan this hearing. I just wanted to be left alone to grieve. And yet the Lord brought Joy into our lives to teach us so many things about eternity. And we still celebrate her birthday every year, 31 years later. And, you know, it's pretty amazing what the Lord taught my boys about eternity through losing their sister and then the joy we felt over Lizzie. So, you know, that was just not a welcome interruption the Lord brought into our lives. But was it a teaching interruption? Absolutely. And so we just need to give God his due and the honor and glory for being the sovereign reigning king of the universe, and thank him that he's loving and good and takes care of his children, and he knows what kind of interruptions to bring into our days, and he knows how they're going to sanctify us and teach us in ways that a textbook never could. So when I say be adaptable, flexible, and maximize the benefits of homeschooling, this is the type of thing I'm talking about. I just realized we're supposed to finish at 1:15 and not 1:30. So we're going to run through these other things. Choose the right equipment. When I was running and I got married, all of a sudden I'm buying shoes on my husband's budget and not my daddy's budget. So I went from the best running shoes ever made to like the Kmart version of running shoes. And in about 3 weeks, I was having problems with my knees and my feet. And all the marathon runners will tell you the most important thing you buy are your shoes. Now, the training's important, everything else. So I would tell you about the curriculum you buy. Those are the shoes. Those are our running shoes. We have to buy something that we're comfortable with, that we feel like we can use, that our children can use. And I don't have time to go into all these other stories. I am so sorry. I just misread my schedule. But there are all kinds of vendors in the vendor hall you can talk to. I think I gave you the name of the BJU Press homeschool consultant for this part of Canada. If you have questions about books, she would be happy to help you. You can see me afterwards. And we are going to stop here, and I'll just take 1 minute to talk about this. I never knew until I started homeschooling that God put a premium on perseverance. I just thought perseverance was a means to an end. And then one day, I have this little thing in this little plaque in my office that says, "By perseverance, the snail reached the ark." And it made me, as silly as it is, it made me want to look up a couple of passages on perseverance. And I was shocked at how many times the words faith and perseverance are linked together and how much of a premium God puts on perseverance. I'm going to see. I've gotten my notes out of line here. But there are a couple of verses. Oh, my goodness. This is when I should not be a paper girl. I think I can do this from memory. But there are a couple of verses where God says, where like John is on the island of Patmos and he's writing in Revelation. And he said, "I'm writing on the island of Patmos because of the faith and the endurance and the tribulation that are in Jesus." And so you'll see this linking. Google or Bible Gateway or whatever you use would really encourage you to see the premium God puts on perseverance. One of the verses says, "Because in the end you need perseverance." Or he talks about the perseverance that is in Jesus Christ. So, you know, there are just going to be days when you are homeschooling, not because you want to, because you know it's Tuesday and we homeschool our kids on Tuesday. And I would really just encourage you for your own growth in faith to do this word study on faith and perseverance. Because, you know, we live in an instant society, especially in the United States, where everything is at your fingertips all the time. Now, COVID is weaning a lot of us from a lot of that. And our societal structure has changed a little bit. But you are in a long-term marathon, not a sprint, and you will need perseverance. And I think you need to know that is a character quality that Jesus admires and wants to see develop in us. So I hope you're encouraged to run your homeschooling marathon. There are definitely strategies we can use to get through it. Ask for help. Visit the mentor booth, you know, at the Matches booth. See the vendors here for help with curriculum. But, you know, in the end, you've got to pace yourself. You've got to be a smart runner. And we all just need to trust in the Lord. So thank you so much. Whoop, there's a keynote session, and then I've got some books left, my book called Refined, that I'm going to be giving away at our session, my last session, the task of raising, the inspiring task of raising servant leaders. And that is my all-time favorite homeschool workshop. And I invite you to come to that, and we will be giving out some books there. So thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed this recording, which was sponsored by The Learning House. For more information on The Learning House, you can visit their website at learninghouse.ca.